6:15 now on Seattle's Morning News. Good morning. Good to have you with us. I'm Colleen O'Brien. More on the economy and coming up after the opening bell, which has a very interesting story in it about cereal sales. But Cairo News Radio's Heather Bosch, she did a report on early Christmas shopping. Yes, already that time of year and people are getting at it. First, we go to CBS business analyst Jill Schlesinger, though. I called her up earlier this morning to ask about the Federal Reserve's two-day policy meeting, which begins tomorrow, and what's likely to happen during that meeting.
I think a whole lot of nothing. They'll talk a lot. They'll tell us that the economy is slowing down. They'll tell us that energy prices are high, but I think that they're going to be happy about other measures of inflation and even the details in the Consumer Price Index report showing that we are seeing a slowdown in prices in a lot of different categories. And I think they're going to be happy with that. And as a result, this is going to be an interesting time for the Fed because they're really in a position where they have to explain, well, why wouldn't you raise rates if oil prices are up by 30% from 3 months ago? Why wouldn't you do something? And they're going to say, well, other measures look good. We're going to stand pat. I think they really do want to see how the economy continues to absorb these high levels of interest rates. Remember, we're at 22-year highs in short-term interest rates. So the economy is still kind of gobbling that up and sort of swallowing that. And we'll see how we're doing. But we're really seeing a deceleration in growth, but also in some inflation.
And I see so many of those optimistic articles and reasons to be positive about the economy, considering what we in the world just went through. But I feel like it's hard to share that feeling when families are struggling to buy a full week's worth of groceries. So where's the disconnect there?
Because when we talk about these overall trends, it does not actually really filter down to the lived experience on the ground sometimes. So, you know, what we do know is that, you know, the last couple of years have been not just taxing on us emotionally because of COVID, but on the economy as well. We've had great dislocations in the economy. And so what we're still seeing is how this economy is resetting after the pandemic. And the most specific way that I can think about is about our lived experiences. You know, our wages might have gone up, say, even over, let's say, the year 2020, 2021, 2022. You might have seen like a nice march higher in your wages or your household income. But unfortunately, we also had inflation moving higher. So if you look at 2022, we saw that real median income was down from the previous year, meaning that when you adjust for inflation, you weren't keeping pace. Now, here's the good thing. In 2023, as inflation has come down, wage growth has come down a little bit, but not as much. So we are seeing that workers actually should be feeling better this year than they did last year. And that may actually help us overall reset the economy in the post-pandemic era.
Even as you're at the grocery store looking at your favorite, Manhattan cherries, and they're $7 more than they used to be. It's such a sticker shock.
Don't buy those Manhattan. Just learn how to drink your bourbon straight up, all right? Stop with that nonsense.
Fair. I won't even talk about alcohol prices. Those are high. So out of this meeting this week, not likely to see an interest rate increase. When might they begin to decline? Is that still years off?
I think this is the key question that investors are trying to figure out. And what I think is funny is like nobody knows. We have really seen all economists really seen their expectations be smashed. And the reason is that we're in a global economy, right? So on some level, people say, oh, the world is slowing down because China's in trouble. And that may be true, but maybe China's not in as much trouble as we thought. And so the big bet right now is that the Fed is done, right, with interest rate increases, and that sometime next year the Fed will start lowering interest rates. Well, maybe not. Maybe prices stay higher for longer, and this will really change not so much your experience in the world as a consumer, but it may change what's happening in financial markets. Because if everyone's betting that interest rates will come down next year, and that's why they're loading up on stocks today, and they're wrong, they're going to end up saying, "Whoops, we made a mistake," and they'll sell stocks. We're in a holding pattern right now. I just want to remind everyone, nobody knows the answer to these questions. I certainly don't. Economists don't. And your local broker really doesn't know that.
Hey, all we can do is give the best advice possible. And I know that President Biden will likely want some of those rates to come down as we head into the next presidential cycle, and certainly mid next year during the election. I was thinking about the presidential cycle, and I thought, Jill, you'd be an excellent debate moderator. What would you ask the candidates, and specifically President Biden, about their plans for the economy?
You know, I first of all, I'd be a terrible moderator because I would like jump in, and I would also have like a buzzer that would like electric shock them every time they
lied. We all want that, Jill. That's why you'd be the best.
Yeah.
Answer the question.
I think that for any candidate right now, the question really becomes, you know, how do you manage the government's role in a crisis, and how do you unwind that? And I think that that's really the issue that we're wrestling with right now. Of course, we wanted the government to step in and send checks out to people during the pandemic. It was so scary, and we wanted that is exactly what government does really well. In a crisis, comes to the rescue. But how do you unwind that? When do you stop? What markers are we putting up to give us a framework? When do we know when enough is enough? And those are the questions that have never been asked and certainly not answered. And it's very easy to say we're going to write a stimulus check. It's very hard to say we're done writing stimulus checks, and here's why. And so we have to be, I think, a little bit more clear-eyed about what triggers federal response and what doesn't.
And what is that?
Well, I think that it can often be just trying to use an outside metric. You know, there's been some economists who've proposed saying, hey, you know what we should do is instead of saying like, oh, we have to enhance unemployment, when a local market's unemployment rate drops below a certain amount, maybe we enhance unemployment. And when it goes back, when it goes up, we give them more money. But when it goes down, we take that money away. And that we have that way, we have a data point that can at least help us trigger the ideas around when we provide support and when we don't.
Excellent. And you can absorb the expertise of Jill Schlesinger, CBS business analyst at JillOnMoney.com. We talk to her every Monday here on Seattle's Morning News. Thank you, Jill.
Great to talk to you. Thank you.
Well, guys, it's only September, but you've seen all the decorations out there for Christmas, right?
Oh, yeah. Costco had them out on the 4th of July.
Yeah. If you want Halloween decorations, you're out of luck. They're gone, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Everything goes so far in advance now. You have to scoop up stuff like 3 months ahead.
You do. You know, a lot of people grinching over the holiday decorations already popping up. But as Cairo News Radio's Heather Bosch reports, your bank account may thank you for getting into the holiday spirit sooner.
To be honest, I embrace the holidays like this guy.
Santa's coming to town.
Santa here? I know him.
So I don't mind seeing Christmas trees in stores early, and I'm already making my holiday list. Apparently, I'm not alone. Ted Rossman is a senior industry analyst at Bankrate.
We found that half of holiday shoppers are planning to begin before the end of October.
That includes 12% who are starting this month and another 12% who started holiday shopping in August. Rossman tells me he began seeing this during the pandemic.
This trend really caught on a couple of years ago when the supply chain was such a mess and everybody felt like they had to shop early or they weren't going to get what they wanted. We're still seeing a lot of early shopping.
One of the reasons for that may be due to something else the Bankrate survey found.
We found a third expect inflation to impact their shopping habits. 25% are stressed about the cost of holiday shopping. 23% anticipate a strain on their budget.
He says shopping early does give you more time to set your budget, comparison shop, and spread out your purchases over time so you can pay off your credit card every month. Remember, interest rates on those cards have hit an all-time high of 20%. And shopping early does not mean you're missing out on bargains.
You don't have to wait till Black Friday anymore. That kind of pricing is often available by early October.
He says retailers are hoping to get your holiday dollars early, especially because of yet another post-pandemic phenomena.
A big trend we see right now is when people splurge, it tends to be more on experiences such as travel and dining and concert tickets and things like that. So I think especially for these holiday favorites, clothes, toys, electronics, things like that, I think retailers are going to be in a discounting mood.
Looking to make the deal even sweeter?
I really like the idea of stacking discounts. So that might involve using a store promotion and a rewards credit card that you hopefully pay in full before interest hits.
He says some businesses like Chase, Rakuten, and Alaska Airlines offer shopping portals. You can get perks, including cash back or travel miles, simply by shopping through their portals. And don't forget about cash you might already have on hand. He says half of Americans have unused gift cards. The average value is close to $200. Heather Bosch, Cairo News Radio.
This will come as no surprise to so many, but Sully, you're a very thoughtful gift giver.
Yes,
when do you
I
start
am.
Holiday shopping?
Well, there are a couple of things I plan throughout the year. We have gifts that, and Holly's birthday is right around Christmas too.
Double whammy.
So yeah, so there's some things I start, but we don't start really shopping in earnest till December.
Good
because
for you.
Again, because we're gone every weekend.
Yeah.
It seems like
I shop year round. Really,
yeah.
It's just hard to hold on to those gifts and wait till Christmas. I like to just give people things.
Yeah,
we
bought Tommy a gamer chair just Friday at Walmart in Bozeman because his other one snapped in half.
But that's not a Christmas gift.
Well,
or is it?
It could be.
Okay.
I mean, seriously.
So you're earmarking it, going, "This is your Christmas gift."
No, I didn't. But we
now.
Just kind of grabbed one randomly, walked in, like weren't expecting to make that purchase, but we did.
And you, Tom?
I tend to get them starting around now if I see something. And, you know that there's something you want to get somebody for Christmas, and you see it and it pops into your mind. You go, I better grab that now while I have the chance rather than forget it or it not be available.
No
so.
Hate. Yeah, when there's no pressure, you can actually put some thought into the gift instead of just grabbing something off the shelf.
For sure.
Into Monday. Let's get a crime update with Casey McNerthney from the King County Prosecutor's Office. We just got a drug use ordinance on the books in Seattle. That's working its way through the system. And a question we often get here is, why can't King County and Seattle work together? Maybe King County can help Seattle with the drug use cases. And what exactly is King County, at least their prosecutors, doing about the drug use and possession, which is on the rise? So we talked with Casey about that.
Well, the good news is they're both simple answers. The first one is that state law requires cities across Washington State to handle their own gross misdemeanors and misdemeanors, regardless of whether it's drug use or any other kind of crime. And the Attorney General's office has also issued two opinions about this, saying, yeah, that's really what the law intends. And so the only way that a county could do it is if there's a clear formal contract for them to do it, which would need to come with resources. And the hard part is, this doesn't make any sense to duplicate resources like that. So that's why County can't just take them. But what King County prosecutors are doing is two things. One, we're handling those crimes where we have jurisdiction, which is an unincorporated King County. But the bigger thing, and what we haven't stopped, we'll certainly keep doing, is charging people who are dealing drugs, particularly fentanyl and meth. Those make up about 70% of the cases that we see. And I checked on Friday, and the number of drug dealing cases that we filed just this year through the end of August is 249. And in roughly about 10-11% of those, there's also enough evidence for a gun charge, too. We're seeing a ton of fentanyl. And I think what people expect us to do is charge those cases particularly. And I mean, these aren't not people who are, you know, moving one or two marijuana joints. These are very serious cases where you get people moving very often large, potentially lethal amounts of fentanyl, and and that leads to all kinds of trouble, like what we see, you know, with Metro on the buses and the problems we see on Third Avenue. And so we're going to keep doing that.
In King County, how would you treat a case like the one we saw out of Whatcom County up in Bellingham, where there is a homeless encampment behind a Walmart? Cairo 7 TV, our news partner, spoke with the mother of a woman who died of an overdose at that camp. I think it was a couple of months ago, and they just did a big drug bust there, found thousands of fentanyl, and yet the camp still stands. What would King County do there? I think most people would say, why aren't you taking this homeless encampment down, considering the drug use and deaths we have on the books?
Yeah, and I think that's a fair question. What prosecutors could do is handle the criminal element of it. So it really doesn't matter if a crime occurs in Medina or if it occurs in a homeless encampment somewhere else in the county. We would handle that crime the same way if it was referred to us. And if we have the evidence to charge it and prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, we would do that. I think some people might hear that and say, oh, would you really? But really, we would. And that happens every day. It's just that many of those cases don't make the news. The other parts of it of who clears that encampment and how that's addressed, those are other departments. But we've got to be consistent with how we handle it, regardless of where that crime happened.
Who are these dealers, by the way? We know in our own research here at Cairo News Radio that a lot of the drugs are being manufactured and made in Mexico, making their way up. But is there large manufacturing happening locally? And if so, are the dealers gang members? Are they forming their own drug businesses within their communities? I guess I just want to get to know who these dealers are, if so many are being arrested and prosecuted.
Well, you're right that there is a lot of fentanyl that's moving up the West Coast from cartels, and that's a big problem. It's hard to say without looking at an individual case, but you see really a lot of those elements that you're talking about, where you'll see large-scale dealers who will try to get people who are vulnerable, try to get people who may have gang ties to try to move that product. It really depends on the case, but you know, we're certainly seeing it at the hot spots and the areas where you would expect, on 3rd Avenue, around 2nd and Bell, around 12th and Jackson. You see people who you know, are sometimes moving huge pounds of powder fentanyl. Sometimes you'll see people with 30 or 40 pills of what they call blues, and so that's a big problem. It really can be all of those things that you mentioned. It just depends on the individual case.
Okay. And, you know, another question you get at the King County Prosecutor's Office is, what kind of cases are you handling outside of this with the limited resources you have? Also, why do you have limited resources?
Well, that's a great question. Well, I'm not sure that there's the same desire to... It's not always easy to say publicly, yes, we should fund prosecutors, but that sure changes when people are victimized, or when they know people who they love or who they're at least friends with who are victimized. That can really change things. You know, if you look at every single one of our senior deputies or deputy prosecutors on the criminal side, and if you look at the workloads on their desk, you know, even if we increased our overall budget by 10 or 20%, they would still, I'm sure, say we've got a ton of cases. And that's because of the increase in crime that we've seen since the pandemic, particularly around violent crime and repeat property crime. And the person who knows this best is David Baker, who is a senior deputy prosecutor and also our stats expert. Here's some talking about the changes we've seen over the last 2 or 3 years.
We are sort of over 90% more, nearly twice as many open and pending homicide cases as there were pre-COVID in 2019. That's a huge increase in just sort of a vast body of ongoing work. That is one area. Then we want to look at other things, like what other types of cases are we looking at? Well, let's look at firearm-involved cases involving a firearm. And those, you look, we went from around 392 to, what was it, 777 as of September 1st, 2023. So again, nearly double the number of firearm cases in our open pending caseload.
Hearing that, Casey, it makes me wonder the cause behind the uptick in violent crime. I think it's too simple to say, well, we're all just still so stressed that we're popping, because not everyone just grabs a gun and goes and does violent crimes like this. Is it then the idea that no laws are on the books, or the laws aren't being enforced, and it's emboldening criminals to be violent?
Well, there's never been a change in how we handle violent crime. And if you look at our caseload, it's only gone up. And there probably are many elements, and I think realistically that might be one of them, but I'm not sure that it's exclusively it. You know, and we're also seeing this issue in many cities. It's not certainly unique to only Seattle or King County.
Great work happening at the King County Prosecutor's Office. We always appreciate your talks and transparency as we work through these really complicated issues together. Casey McNerthney from the King County Prosecutor's Office, thanks so much for joining us.
You bet. Thanks a lot, Colleen.
Coming up next hour, we had a long talk. We talked about retail theft rings, and if those individuals who like rush into stores and grab what they can, if they ever get caught, what it takes to get them caught, and when they are prosecuted, how much time are they actually spending in prison? At this time, we do the Daily Dose of Kindness, just a way to bring a little joy to your day. It's brought to you by Robert W. Baird. Marvin Jones Sr. was one of 15 students to desegregate his high school. And years later, he wrote to the students that bullied him with racist taunts. But one letter was different. CBS's Steve Hartman has that story.
What amazes 75-year-old Marvin Jones the most is that he's back at his old high school, period. It was a different time. Schools across the South were desegregating, including Brunswick High in Lawrenceville, Virginia, where it fell to Marvin and these 14 other kids to take that first painful step.
On the bus, the students would bring KKK flyers.
So to heal, Marvin decided to put pen to paper, writing letters to the very students who tormented him.
What did you say in the letters?
I would tell what each person had done to me.
Marvin wrote about 90 such letters to former classmates, pouring out his pain whether people wanted to hear it or not, and most didn't. But one of the letters he mailed struck a different tone, and that letter was very well received. The recipient was Paul Fleshett. Marvin says Paul was one of the few students who never bullied him or said an unkind word.
Really touch me.
Marvin wrote,
there were many days that I wanted to strike up a conversation with you and that I perceived you as one of the students I could have been friends with.
Did you get a sense that he was trying to open a door?
Absolutely.
And when you saw that, what did you think?
I thought, well, I'm going to go through that door. Hey, buddy.
Marvin and Paul became close friends.
Good to see you.
And that friendship eventually led to this.
We acknowledge their sacrifice. We celebrate their legacy.
Last week, Paul and other leaders in the community hosted a ceremony honoring the Brunswick 15. Those 15 brave children who were once treated like untouchables, now embraced with open arms.
It means a lot. It means that we have overcome a lot.
Marvin used to say he never had one good day at Brunswick High School. But almost 60 years later, looks like maybe he finally has.
That is CBS's Steve Hartman. Never too late to write that letter and right a wrong. It is 7:47 on Seattle's Morning News. This is when we welcome G. Scott from the G. and Ursula Show. Weekdays 9 to noon here on Cairo News Radio. Hi, G.
Hi.
You're all smiles.
Down goes Frazier. Down goes Frazier.
What?
I had to do that because... Let me set the stage.
Okay.
There were a lot of people in NFL world that actually thought that the Detroit Lions would beat the Seattle Seahawks. The Detroit Lions and their fans, Colleen, they were pulling up in blue ski mask.
What?
Yeah, the blue ski mask, the fans. And I'm not going to lie, they had the energy. This Detroit Lions team just coming off of beating the Super Bowl champs, Kansas City, the week before. They're coming in. This is going to be the unveiling of the Barry Sanders statue, who's in the Hall of Fame. They had all this good stuff happening. And it's like the Detroit Lions, and they're talking crap, all this kind of stuff. And we Seahawks fans are like, well, the Seahawks didn't look good at Lumen Field. So hopefully
I'm nervous.
And then, you know, it's all, but no, down goes Frazier. 1973, when George Foreman beats Joe Frazier. And that's what happened. The Seahawks went out there and they got it done, and they got it done right. I want to remind everybody, because a lot of times, Lyle last week, oh, I don't know, Pete Carroll, he might be.
Really?
The Seahawks and Pete Carroll have won 15 out of their last 16 games on games that start at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 o'clock start times. Them boys is good.
The stats that are kept in sports are just always amuse me. But yeah, I mean, you can't. Is it unique to Seattle sports fans for us to like lose one game and be like, well, there goes the season?
When it comes to the Seahawks, yes.
Not the. I mean, I feel like the Mariners kind of get the same treatment.
I mean, I don't. I think it's a little bit different. Maybe there's more games. With football, I mean, at least with baseball, you play a game on Monday. You play another game on Tuesday.
Yeah.
With football, you play on Sunday, and you gotta wait.
You got a whole week to sit and think about. Well, what did they do right then?
They did right. First of all, Geno Smith was outstanding in that game, and the defense was outstanding. They forced three turnovers in that game. There was a huge interception by Trey Brown. He got a pick six where he intercepts the ball, runs it in for a touchdown. They were really good, I thought, defensively, and they just went into a hostile environment. Now, the game went into overtime. The game went to overtime, and it was a close game. If the Seahawks don't cause some of those turnovers, if the Detroit, if it was a fifth, we'd all be drunk probably. But anyway, back to if they don't turn the ball loose and get those turnovers, I think we might be talking about an 0-2 team. So the Detroit Lions are a good team. No doubt about it. It is not the same old Detroit Lions. That was huge. They needed that game. They're 1-1 now, Colleen. They come home to a home game this Sunday against the Carolina Panthers. The number one pick, Bryce Young, is their quarterback. What's so special about this one? If you're going to be there, I cannot wait. Beat me there. Don't meet me there. Today, this week, is the 10-year anniversary of the Super Bowl team.
That's right.
So all of those guys are going to be in attendance. Ooh. I was talking to a few. A lot of folks can't wait. Folks bringing their families. It is just going to be pretty cool. It's going to be pandemonium. They need that. They needed that game in Detroit.
I love seeing you this way.
Yeah.
You are in your element with the Seahawks.
Okay. Can I just... It's not a good thing.
Why?
Because my mood should not be predicated on whether or not the Seahawks win or lose. Now, if you're listening right now, and if you're one of those people, or... if you're married to one of those people, or if one of your kids is one of those people, just understand, we can't help it. My mood is predicated on that. It was an early game. Had they lost that game, your boy would have been eating ice cream, cheeseburgers, all kinds of stuff.
A brownie on the bottom, too,
but
right?
But instead, guess what I had for dinner last night?
Salad? I don't know. What do you celebrate with?
I had salmon, a little piece of salmon,
and nice,
some asparagus.
Fats.
Nice, healthy, good meal. Coming in this morning, woke up ready to go. Couldn't wait to get on SMN this morning. Where my brother Dave at?
He's on vacation.
Vacation?
Yeah.
He probably went to the Detroit Lions game. No, he was probably in the blue ski mask.
We heard he was in like Montreal or something. Like he goes on like smart vacations.
Dave go to places that you can't pronounce.
It's so true.
I be in Ohio.
By the way, I love how you say Detroit.
What? Detroit?
Yeah, you say Detroit Lions.
Oh, Detroit Lions. Oh,
I love how
Detroit.
You say it. Yeah.
Oh. Well, you know, there's a lot of things when I get on Cairo Radio. A lot of people would be like, G always says it like this. Man, it sounds a little different, don't it?
Be more like G. We love you, G. Thanks
right,
for joining us.
See ya.
Keep celebrating, Seahawks. Love that. Seattle's Morning News. Good morning. I'm Colleen O'Brien. Earlier, I spoke with Casey McNerthney from the King County Prosecutor's Office, and we went over the drug crime cases in the area. And you can hear that first part of the interview on this Seattle's Morning News podcast. It's up at about 9:30 every morning at mynorthwest.com. In part two, though, Casey takes me through the latest on retail theft. I asked him about these bold thefts where hordes of people run into a store, take as much as they can fit in their hands, and run out. Do they ever get caught?
They do, yeah. And I think you see it a lot in the early parts on the news because surveillance video makes for great TV. But it doesn't always make great TV when you see them in the courtroom for sentencing or for convictions. That's pretty boring TV, you know, just to see a courtroom and those procedures. But they do happen all the time.
Yeah, I think people want to see justice. So maybe we should be in the court more often showing people being brought to justice. How do they get caught? Is it facial recognition on that surveillance? Is it people, you know, snitching on each other? How do you catch these large rings of thieves?
Usually what it is a lot of just kind of boots on the ground police work where you get search warrants to say, hey, you know, identifying who they think it might be, sometimes putting out bulletins to different departments to say, hey, here's a clear photo that we've got from surveillance. Can anybody help with some leads here? That generates a lot. And then kind of putting the puzzle pieces together and then bringing that before the court, and then working with prosecutors to say, do you think we have the evidence that we can prove this beyond a reasonable doubt?
So just good old gumshoe work. It doesn't take anything to. I mean, that would be a deterrent for me, especially if it does. It looks like maybe the sentencing range for somebody doing that is 4 to 5 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's if you have a significant number of felonies to begin with. There's a guy who's going to be sentenced on Friday, who was in one of those videos from incidents at the downtown Nordstrom and at the Louis Vuitton store in Bellevue. Here's Nicole Lawson. She's the person in our office, the prosecutor in our office, who works with businesses large and small, working on cases just like these ones.
He was involved in two thefts in Bellevue from Gucci and Louis Vuitton. He was also involved in July in thefts from Nordstrom in Seattle on several occasions, stealing high dollar, high value merchandise.
And is he now in prison?
He's in custody now. You know, once he's sentenced, he'll go from jail to prison. Yeah,
sure. Oh, but he's in the works right now. He's caught. He's right. Being sentenced. Great. All right. Well, we like to hear it. Great work happening at the King County Prosecutor's Office. We always appreciate your talks and transparency as we work through these really complicated issues together. Casey McNerthney from the King County Prosecutor's Office, thanks so much for joining us.
You bet. Thanks a lot, Colleen.
Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to the show's podcast. We're happy you're here.
And you can keep up with the show and find some of the stories from today online at MyNorthWest.com.